Yes, Your Honor. I'm Steve Cohn, the attorney for the amicus, and I'll have 6 minutes. Mr. Tolfason, attorney for Mr. Tides, will have 6 minutes, and we'll reserve 3 for rebuttal.
Got it.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
This case concerns a per se rule prohibiting whistleblowers from contacting the press.
Counsel, I have difficulty seeing it that way. It looks to me as though what it concerns is a statute that prohibits retaliation against whistleblowers, provided that their disclosures are to one of 3 classes of recipients of the information. I don't see where the statute says anything about the press.
Your Honor, the statutes, these 3 categories, is an actual misreading of the statute. The definition...
Does the statute mention the press?
It does not, Your Honor.
Okay. So I look at the statute, and what it says is that no company may discharge an employee because of lawful information done by the employee to provide information when the information is provided to A, a federal regulatory or law enforcement agency, B, a member of Congress or committee of Congress, C, a person with supervisory authority over the employee. And that's all she wrote. Is there some other section? Am I looking at the wrong section?
Your Honor, there's 1514AA1, which you're reading from. There's also 1514AA2.
Okay, what's good for you in AA2?
1514AA2 says cause to be filed. The language in 1514AA2 is substantially identical to a variety of other whistleblower protection laws that have been in existence for 30 years, all of which were interpreted as protecting contacts with the press. It's the concept of cause to be filed.
Let's see, that section has 4 statutes listed, plus SEC rules and provisions of federal law relating to fraud against shareholders. I didn't understand that the disclosures here fell within those categories.
Your Honor, you can't mix. There's apples and oranges. The question of who you disclose information to is one issue. The second issue is what type of information is disclosed.
But who matters? So if you work for Boeing, disclosing information to Airbus could be a problem because they're a major competitor. Disclosing information to the Iranian Secret Service or the Chinese Secret Service could be a problem because Boeing does a lot of defense work. It seems like who you disclose to really does matter, and those disclosures could be done indirectly through the press as well as directly.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and that's why this court in Wrighton addressed the issue of how do you police disclosures to the press. It set up a balancing test which is substantially identical to the Pickering balancing test established by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1968, which also concerned disclosures to the press. They're not absolute. It's not like you go to the SEC
Pickering
per se.
Was about a public employee's constitutional right to express his views in public on a matter of public interest.
That's correct. And what Pickering decided was that because the person was an employee, instead of having more of an absolute right like a citizen may have, they adopted a balancing test.
The law on public government, federal government employees' whistleblower protection uses the word any. It gives them protection without regard to who the disclosure is made to. This law doesn't say that.
Yeah, that's under the Whistleblower Protection Act, not Pickering. But getting back to Pickering, what Pickering does is it acknowledges that in the context of an employee-employer relationship.
You're saying that the Pickering, I know Pickering very well just by chance because of other cases. And what you must be saying is that an employee of a private employer has a constitutional right to disclose the the business confidences of his employer to the press.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that.
That's what Pickering says.
No, okay. No, it doesn't, because Pickering establishes
that the school teacher has a constitutional right to disclose matters of public concern to the public.
And then it adopts a balancing test. That balancing test was substantially picked up in the private sector context by this court in Wrighton. The balancing test of Wrighton, which reads as follows. You can fire an employee if they go to the press, and what's the balancing test? Harmonious and efficient operation. Was the disclosure reasonable in the light of the circumstances? Obviously, disclosing confidential business information, the balance would tip against the employee. But in Wrighton, private sector employment, they understood that employees go to the press. In whistleblower cases, every whistleblower case, public or private sector, up until this decision, it's acknowledged whistleblowers go to the press. You establish a balancing test. In fact, the two main precedents under the first Department of Labor administered whistleblower...
I suppose Congress may have purposely limited what whistleblowers can do in this statute because of the danger of industrial espionage and other concerns.
No, it's not the case, because if you look at the definition of protected activity, there are two clauses. The one in which they add additional clauses includes Congress. That's a quintessential public disclosure. Filing the lawsuit, everything in this proceeding can become or is public, either at the time filed.
Congress has non-public proceedings all the time when they're investigating.
Yeah.
They have behind-closed-doors disclosures.
Obviously, but if the employee files their SOX case in federal court and lays out their protected disclosures in the complaint, it's public.
We want to pass the baton to your colleague.
Yeah, thank you very much, Your Honor.
We're so short of time, I'd just like to make a couple quick points. First of all, when the SOX was enacted, it said you could talk to any congressman. It didn't say how. It didn't say you couldn't get a bullhorn and go in front of Congress, in front of the congressional building, and yell your whistleblowing. There's nothing in this statute that says it's confidential. You would be the first court ever to interpret any of these statutes, and we cited four of the whistleblowing statutes where you're allowed to use the media as a mode of communication. You can use a bullhorn. You can use email. You can use Twitter. You can use anything. The media is one of the most effective.
You can use this for blackmail.
We're not talking about blackmail. We're talking about that's the kind of things that Enron's lawyers would have said.
Well, you could use it.
Nobody that's doing fraud.
I must be a bad fellow because I asked you a question that you think Enron's lawyers might have raised. But let's suppose I am a bad fellow. Still, I don't understand why your interpretation wouldn't provide for an employee who said Airbus would really like to know just what your particular business problem in my bailiwick is, and I'm going to use a bullhorn and stand in front of the Capitol after alerting reporters that I'm going to be doing it unless you keep me on and give me a raise.
All right, well, some of the cases have letter-writing campaigns and whatnot, but what you've done is you've taken a question to the common law and statutory protection for intellectual property, and you've asked that question in the context of Sarbanes-Oxley internal auditors identifying fraud. They identified seven statutes and SEC rules that were violated. For example, the court said that they complained about terms and conditions of employment. The SEC has a rule that requires companies to adopt a COSO or a similar framework. The fundamental policy behind COSO is that you have healthy control environments to prevent these kinds of fraud where companies are trying to hide their fraud under a veil of confidentiality. The government has put this system in place where you have to have financial controls, written financial controls, and you have to have a healthy control environment, which means you don't harass your internal auditors. That's the first step.
Mr. Talton, let me tell you an argument that they made that's caught my eye and see what you think of it. They say a lot of your argument is more or less structured on another whistleblowing law that uses different language, and Sarbanes-Oxley is different. in your case is a Sarbanes-Oxley case, so your argument, your statutory argument, really doesn't fit the language we're dealing with here.
I think it's cause or we've cited the new case on what a filing is. Filing is giving any kind of oral notice. Esten case, I think that was. It just came out a month ago.
No, what I mean is they enumerate three categories of recipients of information, unlike the Whistleblowing Act.
Yeah, the statute uses the words cause information to be provided or otherwise assist in investigation, including, and the preamble to the rules in an act, it says you can go to a congressman that's not even doing an investigation.
Yeah, but your guy didn't go to a congressman, so...
But you caused. They caused information to be provided.
Which congressman got the information?
Well, actually, I've talked to several of them.
Anything in the record other than who you talked to?
There's nothing in the record. Okay. But certainly one of the best ways to get this information out, you look at Madoff.
So you would read the statute to mean you caused to be provided to Congress information by giving it to the press and assuming the congressman read the papers.
The press is one of the best ways to get the attention. You can't just pick up the phone and call a congressman usually. You've got to get their attention somehow. You've got to cause this attention.
What do you make of the difference in language between the Whistleblower Act and the SOX Act?
Well, Congress gave their intent when they were doing this Sarbanes-Oxley. I think there was only one dissenting vote on this when they voted for the statute. And they overwhelmingly wanted to follow all of the whistleblowing. In fact, that we cited in the brief, I think it was Leahy and Jackson, said that we wanted to provide as much as the federal employees got. Now, why they didn't use the exact language of the federal employee statute, I don't know. But they knew that...
That's a major problem, isn't it, for you?
Well, there's three statutes. Well, I can give them to you. There's the Energy Reorganization Act, Toxic Substances Control Act, Occupational Safety and Health Act, that all those cases have said you can go to the media. You've got the agency, and we have that as Exhibit 1 in our...
That may be, but this one says you have to go to Congress, you have to go to your supervisor, and whoever else you have to go to.
Well, you're enforcement.
Law enforcement.
I think you're...
Indeed, but the other statutes, you'd be okay under the other
statutes.
It's
clearly within the weight, within the statutes. And when you look at those statutes, we cited the case where the newspaper got wind of the idea that there was asbestos in the trucks that were leaving, I think that was the Oklahoma University. And that statute was extended to talking to the media about the dust of the asbestos.
That's not a SOX case.
No, but it's a whistleblowing case.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying the two whistleblowing statutes are different. That's their point. So to tell me that you can do it under the other statute, you may be right.
But those statutes are more restrictive than SOX.
Why doesn't that hurt your case instead of helping it? I mean, if you've got other statutes that have much better language for you and this one doesn't, why isn't that an indication that the lobbyists for one side were more persuasive than the lobbyists for the other side on this statute, and they got the more restrictive language?
All of the statutes are silent on mode of communication. They don't say you can use email. They don't say you can use bullhorns or not. The media is not where you file it.
So you think the way you could disclose to law enforcement is stand in front of the police station after alerting reporters that you'd be there and do it on a bullhorn?
That's the Wrighton case that you have where they called a press conference from the Ninth Circuit. But yeah, sure, the statute doesn't prevent that. That doesn't say it's confidential. I'm out of time.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll hear from the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'm Eric Wolf, counsel for Boeing.
Mr. Wolf.
May it please the court. This is a very straightforward case of statutory interpretation. That is how the district court addressed it. The question can be answered right on the face of the statute. As the court has noted, the language here is very precise. In fact, it's one of the most precise of the whistleblower statutes because it identifies exactly what type of information it has to be and exactly who it has to go to. The other statutes are not like that. And to try and portray this case as some kind of outlier, it's not really an outlier. It's just a different statute. And it's more restrictive. Let me speak to the points, some of the points that have been raised. First of all, there were suggestions that there's some other lines of authority, that there's all these cases out there that talk about whistleblowing to the media. There really aren't. There are some. There's the Donovan case, which is an OSHA case that the Secretary of Labor brought in Kansas in 1982. That's one. And then there is, as Judge Silverman, you pointed out, the Federal Whistleblower Protection Act. And that statute refers to any disclosure. And, in fact, the Hoffman case is a 2000 or 2001 Federal Circuit opinion, and it recounts the legislative history on the Federal Whistleblower Protection Act, which is modestly comical because they were essentially reversing or legislating to overturn numerous Federal Circuit decisions, and they were very emphatic in the legislative history. Any means any. Be clear, Federal Circuit, any means any. We really mean it. And they recount all that. The legislative history here is nothing like that. It's all about going to the proper authorities. It's all about telling the FBI or the SEC or reporting internally. And Mr. Tollefson says, well, go into the media. That's such a good way to do it. Actually, it's not a good way to do it. A good way to do it is to first nip it in the bud internally, and then if you really can't, then you can go to the authorities.
Aside from what would be a nice way, as I read the law, you don't have to first go to your boss.
You do not.
You can first go to Congress.
You could.
Make maximum trouble.
Yeah.
Is there any law, or do we just have to do it ourselves, that says that cause information to be provided in 1514AA1 can't be interpreted to mean cause to be provided by telling Congress in public as opposed to privately?
I think there has to be. We thought a lot about that. What are the limits of cause to be provided? And it obviously can't be but for causation.
I mean, I'm wondering if what the employee could do is say, you better give me a really big bonus and all kinds of good things, or I'm going to write a letter to every one of the 435 congressmen and 100 senators, and I can't help it if somebody else happens to get a copy of the letter because their staff sends a Xerox to a reporter.
I think if that case arose, I would say, number one, that employee might be that you could fire that employee for blackmail, but also...
Okay, let's leave out the blackmail element. The employee doesn't try to use the threat. Instead, what he does is he sends a letter to all 435 congressmen and 100 senators, just puts a letter in the mail to them. He knows perfectly well that it's inconceivable that some staffer isn't going to give a copy of the letter to some reporter, and it's going to be all over, I don't know, the Army, Navy, Times, or whoever is interested in this sort of thing. Why can't the statute be interpreted that way?
If they can make a showing, it's possible it can, but here's what they would have to show. The way the statute lays it out, it has to be a lawful act, so it can't be misappropriating trade secrets or something like that. And when they talk about providing the information or causing it to be provided to those specified entities, including Congress, that has to be the person's objective. The objective has to be, I'm going to be telling Congress about what I personally believe is a violation and what a reasonable person would believe is a violation of the various listed laws. And I think if they can make that showing, which is the plaintiffs have to make that showing, but if they can make that showing that that was their objective, that they really believed it, and that they are objectively reasonable, and they're sending it to an entity that's listed right in the statute, it's probably covered. If there are no further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wolf. You gentlemen have a couple of minutes left.
Your Honor, I'd like to address the issue raised about the statutory interpretation. I'd ask this court to look carefully at 18 U.S.C. 1514A2. That language mirrors OSHA 29 U.S.C. 660C, which has been interpreted, that type of language is covering going to the press. It mirrors the Water Pollution Control Act 33 U.S.C. 1367A, which has been interpreted by the Department of Labor for 30 years as protecting the press. It covers the ERA 42 U.S.C. 5851A1F, which has been interpreted by numerous decisions of the Department of Labor. all of these decisions interpreting that portion of the SOX definition of protected activity, those decisions existed before Congress passed SOX and before Congress essentially lifted these standard Department of Labor whistleblower protection laws and applied that model to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Furthermore,
let me ask you, I'm a little puzzled about the applicability of A. Is it A2?
A2.
Because your complaint appears to have been brought under A1.
Your Honor, I'm for the amicus, I'm talking about this, the interpretation of the law, and I don't know if the complaint specified A1 or A2.
Suppose, take my word for it, it says A1. Okay.
So A1 is also very interesting because what it does is, in those earlier laws, imagine, if you will, all it said was cause to be provided information to a regulatory authority. That's what they said.
I can't see where A2 addresses this. It protects employees who file formal proceedings, testify in formal proceedings, and that didn't happen here.
Okay, exactly. Under the Water Pollution Control Act, which uses the identical words, filed, instituted, or caused to be filed any proceeding, the Labor Department, this is 30 years ago, said to cause a proceeding means contacting the press is the same as causing a proceeding.
It doesn't say cause a proceeding. It says cause to be filed.
Yeah, cause to be filed. They interpreted that language, the cause to be language, as covering that intermediary of going to a newspaper and having that information then filtered down to a government agency, well recognizing that government agencies often react in a timely and more effective manner when information's in the press. And this, then 2 years later in Donovan, the district court says this: it is clear that a proceeding could be initiated after an employee's communication with the news media, adopting that exact same concept of the Department of Labor, applying it to OSHA instead of just water pollution control. These were the precedents when Congress enacted SOX. Now,
wrap up your answer. You're out of time.
Okay. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Just one last thing. The first clause, what's fascinating about it, is that in the older statutes, it pretty much says, you know, contacting a regulatory authority. SOX increased who you could contact. But the concept, the actual phraseology, is the same. The court interpreted increasing who you could initiate a proceeding with as limiting, when in fact it expanded. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case just argued is submitted. We'll stand in recess for this session. The panel wants to thank Ms. Brebner for her help this week. Thank you.